I have seen no evidence that large numbers of people ever lived in the Bainey, Betty J. Meggers of the Smithsonian Institution told me. Claiming otherwise is just wishful thinking. Indeed, two Smithsonian-backed archaeologists from Argentina have argued that many of the larger mounds are natural floodplain deposits. A small initial population could have built the remaining causeways and raised fields in as little as a decade. Similar criticisms apply to many of the new scholarly claims about Indians, according to Dean R. Snow, an anthropologist at Pennsylvania State University. The problem is that you can make the meager evidence from the ethnohistorical record tell you anything you want, he says. It's really easy to kid yourself. And some have charged that the claims advance the political agenda of those who seek to discredit European culture, because the high numbers seem to inflate the scale of native loss. Disputes also arise because the new theories have implications for today's ecological battles. Much of the environmental movement is animated, consciously or not, by what geographer William Denovan calls the pristine myth, the belief that the Americas in 1491 were an almost untouched, even Edenic land, untrammeled by man. In the words of the Wilderness Act of 1964, a U.S. law that is one of the founding documents of the global environmental movement. To green activists, as the University of Wisconsin historian William Cronin has written, restoring this long-ago, putatively natural state is a task that society is morally bound to undertake. Yet if the new view is correct, and the work of humankind was pervasive, where does that leave efforts to restore nature? The Bainey is a case in point. In addition to building roads, causeways, canals, dikes, reservoirs, mounds, raised agricultural fields, and possibly ball courts, Erickson has argued, the Indians who lived there before Columbus trapped fish in the seasonally flooded grassland. The trapping was not a matter of a few isolated natives with nets, but a society-wide effort in which hundreds or thousands of people fashioned dense, zigzagging networks of earthen fish weirs or fish corralling fences among the causeways. Much of the savanna is natural, the result of seasonal flooding. But the Indians maintained and expanded the grasslands by regularly setting huge areas on fire. Over the centuries, the burning created an intricate ecosystem of fire-adapted plant species dependent on indigenous pyrophilia. The Bainey's current inhabitants still burn, although now it is mostly to maintain the savanna for cattle. When we flew over the region, the dry season had just begun, but mile-long lines of flame were already on the march. Smoke rose into the sky in great juddering pillars. In the charred areas behind the fires were the blackened spikes of trees, many of them of species that activists fight to save in other parts of Amazonia. The future of the Bainey is uncertain, especially its most thinly settled region near the border with Brazil. Some outsiders want to develop the area for ranches, as has been done with many U.S. grasslands. Others want to keep this sparsely populated region as close to wilderness as possible. Local Indian groups regard this latter proposal with suspicion. If the Bainey becomes a reserve for the natural, they ask, what international organization would let them continue setting the plains afire? Could any outside group endorse large-scale burning in Amazonia? Instead, Indians propose placing control of their land into their hands. Activists, in turn, regard that idea without enthusiasm. Some indigenous groups in the U.S. Southwest have promoted the use of their reservations as repositories for nuclear waste. And, of course, there is all that burning.